This week on the podcast, why do the Bank of England keep getting it so wrong? We reveal all and understanding your cash flow back to basics. Welcome to the Profit Cash Growth Podcast. This is the podcast for six and seven figure business owners who are looking to grow a financially successful business. My co-host, Claire Hancock, is a finance director, chartered accountant, and entrepreneur. And every week, I'll be exploring guidance and frameworks designed to help you increase your profits, improve your cash flow, and grow your business. Well, we had another record week last week, didn't we, Claire?
Yes, we did.
I don't want to say this every week, but every week is just getting better and better and better. And I thought the fight off was the best. And it turns out everybody liked last week's episode even more.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was last week they liked. Was it all the shit chat that we were having about Tesla?
Or the sales metrics, which I did like as well. I think it was fantastic. Anyway, talking about Tesla, because everybody's cleaner's got a Tesla nowadays, haven't they?
Yeah, I always find it a little bit odd when our cleaner arrives and, yeah, she's driving the most expensive Tesla model that there is, so...
But we did have a chat with her, didn't we?
We did, yes.
On the back of last week's episode, we did say to her, when her Tesla lease comes up, would she buy another one?
And she said, I actually took some notes on this. I was like interviewing her, wasn't I? She said, absolutely not. She would go back to her Range Rover.
Yeah, she did. She said, I love
my
Range Rover.
She was quite scathing about Tesla, wasn't she? She said, since Tesla have opened up the charging stations. So a couple of years ago, Tesla charging stations were just exclusively for Tesla users. And now they're open to the general public. And she said, it's impossible to get on a Tesla charging station now. She also said that the customer service from Tesla is really bad as well, didn't she?
She said it was absolutely awful. She actually said the car itself wasn't very good either, didn't she? Like the paintwork. What was that she said about the paint?
She said, she said that when you order the car, you only get a choice of four colours, which she said she wanted a bit more variety. And she said the exterior colour drives, I don't know how accurate this all is now, but she said the exterior colour, if you choose red, then you get brown inside or something. And if you choose white, then you get black inside. And that's how it comes. There's no customization or personalization.
Yeah.
And she said the paintwork is shocking and it chips really easily. And we also asked her about her insurance, didn't we?
Yeah.
And she said that she's paying roughly about £75 more per month for the insurance on the Tesla than she did on her Range Rover.
Yeah, it was about two-thirds more expensive, I think, from what I can remember, than what she paid there. So lots of reasons to back up further from the horse's mouth, so to speak, our conversations last week. And also in the news this week, two further stories came out from Tesla after that story we covered last week, which I think just sort of talked or leans into what we were talking about. Well, obviously, first of all, Elon announced that he was going to cut 10% of the workforce. So obviously, again, just showing where, the difficulties they've had, but he announced blanket redundancies, 10% of the workforce going in Tesla. And they've also announced that they're going to take £2,000 off the price of their cars.
£2,000? Yeah. I mean,
it's 10% as well, isn't it? Probably a bit less than 10% on the higher ones. But
I think the average Tesla costs like £58,000 or something in terms of once all of the costs are put on top of it. And that's what people are paying in terms of like PCP payments or however you choose to buy the car. So
it's not going to scratch the surface, is it?
It's not going to. Or in the Tesla world, you will scratch the surface quite a lot, apparently, because of the shitty paperwork.
And on that bombshell, let's move on to this week's news story of the week.
So this week's news story of the week is my story. And I read this and I found this quite staggering, actually. So the Bank of England have had what's been described as a once-in-a-generation review of their forecasting processes. So they, rightly so, received a lot of criticism when interest rates started to rise because they seemed to not be able to predict that the interest rates were rising. And then they didn't react quick enough and put interest rates up. And so a man called Dr. Bernanke, who was the head of the Federal Reserve in, I think, 2008, when the last financial crash happened, did a review into the Bank of England's processes. And he was quite scathing, and he said that they're using outdated systems. They didn't forecast for enough different scenarios, and they were relying too much on one central forecast. So yeah, quite scathing in the review, actually, and lots of changes hopefully coming to the Bank of England, which means that we'll have better forecasting and better monetary policy in the long term for the country and more stability.
Well, we shall wait and see, because they've never been great at it. This is apparently an error that's quite recent. But you know, if you look back through the, you know, the decade long low interest rates we had, you know, everybody would argue that interest rates should have been crept up slowly and steadily throughout that period to enable us not to have this massive boom when something went wrong and, you know, the quadrupling of people's mortgages. So actually, you know, is this a new era? Have they always been behind the curve with this type of stuff? It's an interesting one. I don't think they've been great at any step of the way in the last 10 to 15 years that I've seen, but it's interesting that they've done a specific review on the sort of technology they use to do this forecasting, and it's totally out of date and wrong.
Yeah, they even said that the team size and the skill set in the team wasn't adequate. So when, for example, COVID and the supply chain issues and then the interest rate spike, when all of that happened, the team was so focused on just doing forecasting that they needed for the next presentation, the next decision to be made, that they weren't able to maintain the models and think about what they needed to forecast for the next thing. So they were literally just going through the motions and refreshing the forecast, and they weren't thinking about what other variables they need to add into it or how they might need to change the forecast. And what was quite staggering when I read this information is that they specifically said that they weren't including enough different forecasts into what they called the central forecast. So the central forecast was like the end result that says that, okay, this is what we think is going to happen with interest rates. But they didn't think about, okay, what would happen if, for example, what happens with employment, if there's like mass unemployment, or as we actually found, situation coming out of COVID, where actually like unemployment was at an all-time low. There was hundreds and thousands of job vacancies advertised, and they weren't forecasting for things like that. They weren't forecasting for wage increases, and they weren't tracking key government policies around trade and taxes and things that would impact the overall interest rates. So one of the recommendations is that they should be forecasting these key variables as independent things, and then those forecasts need to feed into this bigger forecast of interest rates.
I think it's interesting because, you know, to suggest that you can forecast an economy is basically almost an impossibility, isn't it? If you read big economies like Ray Dalio and people like that, you know, they'll explain to you that you can follow very, very top macro trends on it. But it's such a complex and moving beast now, and especially with the way that financial products are, major financial products like mortgages are fixed and various other things, it's just hugely difficult to use such a blunt tool to manage the economy. And they only really ever have a blunt tool to play with, don't they?
Yeah, they've only really got one thing, and that's interest rates. I mean, for those people that sort of lived through COVID, and we look back now, and of course, hindsight is a wonderful thing, but it does seem if you look back now, you could almost foresee the inflation that we had and therefore the need to push interest rates up. Because the Bank of England, when we were coming out of COVID around like sort of 2021, the Bank of England were forecasting a mini recession. And for those of us that were in business at the time, that just seemed staggering, because I can remember we had a record order bank. There was so much pent-up demand because of supply chain issues. We had so many jobs advertised because we couldn't recruit people. And that was being seen across so many different industries. And I can remember thinking at the time it was staggering that the Bank of England were forecasting a mini recession. And
I think they have
so out of touch with what's happening in the world.
I think they have a real issue with getting their data from, you know, people right on the ground, which amazes me, because I was just listening to a podcast the other day from a business owner, and he's one of a huge panel of business owners that get interviewed, I think, every quarter by the Bank of England. So they are out there talking to small businesses that represent this about, and they're asking, and they spend a serious amount of time. I think they said they spent, you know, I think it was a couple of hours with them every quarter talking about everything around how they're finding employing people, you know, how they're finding getting loans. So they're out there. I just don't, it doesn't feel like bringing it together is great in the way that they do things. So.
The thing with a conversation like that, though, is that it's unquantifiable data. So when you have a chat with somebody,
yeah, it's all anecdotal, but you've got to pull it together.
And you've got to pull that data together in a way that's usable. You know, a sentence can't be used to analyse data.
No.
So from that perspective, there was also quite a lot of criticism in the report about what the difference is between factual data and the analysts or the experts applying their interpretation of the data and or their personal prediction on the data. So I think moving forward, do I think that the Bank of England will get any better at forecasting? No, because if you look back at history, literally every economic situation that's ever really occurred around the world has never been predicted.
No, absolutely. And they seem to be well and truly on track for making the decision about bringing interest rates back down, overdue and late, as they were for putting them up. So I'm sure they're going to make the same mistake on the way down as they made on the way up.
Which is quite ironic, really, because, should they be bringing interest rates down or not? I don't know.
Anyway, let's move on to this week's big deep dive topic. So this week, Claire, you've released a fantastic YouTube video all about really the 101 basics of cash flow. And the great thing about the video is that it really takes you from your starting cash flow balance to your ending cash flow balance. And what I liked was all of those steps that business owners should be thinking about throughout that. So perhaps can you start by expanding a little bit on this? I thought it's a really good framework for business owners to get their head around.
Yeah, so one of my pet peeves with the online bookkeeping systems is that they really are not great giving small business owners information about their cash flow. And I think that I find that the systems tend to do one of two things. They tend to, firstly, they are really good at telling you what your bank balance is, but that's not rocket science. We can all log on to our banks and get that. So then they tend to default to either what's known as an operating cash flow statement, which is actually a financial statement that big companies have to publish as part of their annual accounts. So it's quite technical and really of little use to small businesses. And what I would say is, as an accountant, an operating cash flow statement is not generally used in businesses on a day-to-day basis, even big corporates. And a lot of accountants don't understand them. So how small business owners are supposed to understand them is beyond me.
Is that what is an operating cash flow? Is it like a snapshot rather? I'm just thinking, like, in my world, the cash flow, something that helps me my cash flow is all about timing. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
So does that give you timing?
No. So an operating cash flow statement, firstly, it's looking historically. It's telling you what has happened.
So that's completely useless.
And the aim is almost to say, okay, well, you made 100K profit, but how much cash did you generate in the business? Okay. And so it will go through your accounts, so your profit and loss and your balance sheet, and it will take out all of the things that are not, that don't have a cash impact. So for example, if you've made a sale, but you haven't collected the cash from the customer, that comes out. If you made a sale in the prior financial year and they paid you in this year, then that goes in.
Right.
So it's taking things out and adding things in that eventually get to, this is how much cash you've generated this year. And that's why that's not particularly helpful, because firstly, for a small business, you can't be looking at annual statements. It doesn't give you enough information. And there's so much information on there. There's so many adjustments that have to go in for customers not paying you, suppliers that you haven't paid, suppliers that you have paid. And you've got VAT return payments that go in there. You've got tax payments that go in there. You've got the fact that PAYE is paid quarterly. You've got the fact that you might have what's known as accruals and prepayments in the finance world too. So you've got all of these adjustments that go in that mean you could have a cash flow statement that's got 20, 30, 40 lines on it. Mm. And it's really quite complicated and quite difficult for people to understand. So why something like that even exists in the small bookkeeping systems is beyond me.
Yeah, I thought the beauty is, I think this is why this is quite a visual topic, actually. And I think the YouTube video and the flip chart and the starting to finishing really, you know, brings it to life for people. So can you just talk us through, like, what that is and, you know, the various things that, you know, people should be looking at?
Yeah, so I have a method that I use in my businesses, and I also implement with all of the clients that I've got that I do monthly reporting for. And it is basically a really simple way of summarising your cash flow, because at the end of the day, what matters to small business owners is three things: how much cash they've got in the bank, where all their money is coming from and going from, and what we think is going to happen with their cash in the future. So it summarises those three things in, what have I got on there, 7 or 8 lines?
Yeah. There's not too many. It sort of starts, obviously, with your revenues in and then works through the various bits that come out.
Yeah, so it's just about breaking down all of those transactions that go in and out of your bank. If you could categorise them into like a handful of different areas. So for example, payroll, everything that goes in and out of your bank related to payroll, because it's not just paying your employees. You might pay your employees on, say, the 25th of the month, but next month you're going to pay the PAYE related to that, and you're going to pay the pensions related to that.
Yeah.
So the timing of things is really critical. So that's why this really simple method of just having these few categories that everything gets categorized into, allows you to give a snapshot. So you can see exactly what's happening on a month by month or even a week by week basis. For example, how much cash are you generating from your customers?
I think if you can solve this element, I mean, speaking to all the business owners I speak to and knowing my own personal experience, this is probably one of the biggest anxieties that I carry and probably most business owners carry, is that I just want to be able to, like, you know, look forward at least 6 months and just go, you know, am I going to be in a place where things are going to be great and I can take money out, or am I going to be in a place where, you know, it's going to be tight and, you know, I might not be able to pay my suppliers or my staff? And I need to know that. It's such an integral sort of report, but it seems to be completely, like, missing from all the accounting systems. And I don't really understand why that is. Why is it missing?
One of the best ones I found for doing this is ClearBooks, actually. And they are actually not one of the bigger packages out there. And I think the main reason why ClearBooks has not been as big as like Xero, QuickBooks, Sage is because it doesn't have the accountant functions. So as an accountant in Xero, in QuickBooks, you can, for example, submit people's tax returns and things like that from within the system. So you can, as an accountant, you can file directly with HMRC. And ClearBooks doesn't really have that functionality. It is literally like a bookkeeping system, and then you need to do your accounts outside of that. So for that reason, I think that a lot of accountants and bookkeepers don't like it. And therefore, it isn't one of the bigger known ones. But actually, in terms of reported information, I love ClearBooks. It's what I use for my business. And if a client came to me and said, what system do you think I should use? I would always probably go with ClearBooks over and above the others. So yeah, I think ClearBooks is really good at doing that.
Great, great. And so if the accounting systems can't do it, or ClearBooks, are you saying that ClearBooks can do it and people should move to that? Or is there another way to solve it? So if, you know, people aren't going to be moving to ClearBooks if they're embedded in QuickBooks over years and years and years. So how do they solve this problem? Is it something that business owners can do themselves? It feels complicated for my little head.
Yeah. So like I said, ClearBooks is quite good at doing it, but even the ClearBooks report is quite long-winded. And I always think it's really important. One of the things that I always say to a business owner, if they're coming to me and they're saying, okay, if you do my monthly reporting, what is it that you're giving me that I'm not getting out of my bookkeeping system? And the main thing that you're getting is you're going to get a succinct report that tells you exactly what you need to focus on. You don't have to trawl through pages and pages of numbers and then try and decipher yourself where it is that you need to focus your attention. We'll do that for you. We'll tell you, look, don't worry about these numbers. These are all trending normally as per the other months. It's this number right here that you need to look at. Yeah. And this is what we recommend you do.
Okay.
And that's what you get from this report. Because I think, I mean, I can't remember how many categories I had on my YouTube video, but I think I have 7 categories of different cash that can go in and out of your business. So if you've just got 7 categories to review, it will literally take you about 60 seconds to have a look at that report, and you'll have the last 6 months worth of data, and you'll be able to clearly see, are the numbers broadly in line with the prior months? Is this what we expect or not? And if it's not, then you go and you do a deep dive analysis and you find out what's going on. And it's that level of succinctness and that information, that sort of intelligence that says this is where you need to be focusing, that the bookkeeping systems don't do. The bookkeeping systems just simply present the data to you in the standard format, and then it's left for you to decipher what it means and if you need to take action.
Sounds amazing. Well, it's something that would, you know, like I say, settle my anxiety. I'm sure it would settle a lot of small business owners' anxiety if they could have somebody to help support with that.
It's also really easy when you've got succinct information there. So for example, if you knew exactly how much you paid out of your bank for the last 6 months related to payroll, it's very easy for you to then forecast what's going to happen in the next 3 to 6 months too, because you know, are you going to be paying one-off bonuses? Are you going to be increasing your headcount? Is somebody leaving your business? So you can easily then take your headline number and adjust it.
Great.
Very quickly for key things that are changing in your business. And so therefore it also helps with forecasting your cash flow too.
Fantastic. So if somebody wants to speak to you, they can go on your website and book a call with you to have a chat about the complexities of their business and talk, if they want to specifically address the cash flow issue and how they can get better cash flow reporting on a monthly basis. That's something you guys can help with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Fantastic. Let's move on to this week's Profit Cash Growth Extra.
So again, I'm going to talk about another bugbear of mine of the online bookkeeping systems. And for some reason, in the real world, when you're a B2B seller, 9 times out of 10, you give payment terms to your customers. And the most common payment term is end of month, where if an invoice is, actually it's 30 days end of month. So that means if an invoice is dated in January, you pay it on the last day of February. And the reason why businesses like end of month payment terms is because you don't want different invoices landing on different days of the month. You don't have to pay suppliers every single day of the month. So you just do one payment run once a month. But very few of the bookkeeping systems actually have end of month payment terms built into them, which is quite staggering, really. So anyway, I was speaking to a customer last week. And one of the things I was saying to them is, look, we can't really forecast your cash based on the information that's in your bookkeeping system because you haven't been using end of month payment terms. And they said to me, well, it doesn't exist in QuickBooks. So I've got a little hack for being able to use the settings in QuickBooks to get an end of month calculation. So that will mean that your invoices to your customers will show the correct due date. And then the analysis in your system that says, for example, how many invoices are overdue and things like that will all be more accurate. So if you're in QuickBooks, the option for 30 days end of month doesn't exist. But when you go into the default payment term settings in the system, you do just need to tick the box that says due by certain day of the month. And then in the two boxes below, you put 31. And that has the equivalent impact of end of month payment term calculation.
Amazing.
Simon's completely lost, I can see.
Well, I'm not a QuickBooks user, so this is just, I can't see.
It's gone right over your head, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's not something that I can resonate with, but I'm sure that it's a bit like the chap you were talking to, where you got this from, who was a QuickBooks user, who it just blew his mind. Like, I'm sure there's people that are listening to this that use QuickBooks that are now like, my goodness, that's just blown my mind.
It's just ridiculous that it's not in there. I mean, it's actually a bugbear of mine. I know I've bigged up ClearBooks, but it's not in ClearBooks. I'm not sure if it's in Xero, actually. I think Xero might have it. Yeah, a lot of the systems, they just don't have end of month. And I mean, end of month is just so common. It's baffling basic, that they don't have it. It's such a basic functionality.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us for another podcast this week. I hope you enjoyed the topics that we've covered. We will be back next week. And as always, if you would like to follow us on the YouTube channel, it's Profit Cash Growth. You can find us on Instagram. You can find us on Facebook. And you can contact Claire at claire@profitcashgrowth.com if you would like to talk to about anything about your business that she could possibly help with. We'll be for you guys, and we'll see you again next week. And as always, please like, share if you know any business owners that would like and enjoy this content every week. It's like having a financial director in your pocket every single week for free. Please share it, comment, rate, and we'll see you again next week.